How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway this week is a very well-known broadcaster, both on sound and vision. He's a compere, a chairman, and presenter of disc shows. It's David Jacobs. David, could you endure loneliness over a long time?
I don't really think I could, quickly thinking about it, because I like to talk to people. I'm known for chatting up people all the time, so I don't think I could. I'd have to learn to.
Mm-hmm. Anything apart from the loneliness that you'd be particularly frightened of?
I suppose I'm a bit of a hypochondriac at heart. I'd be frightened a bit of getting terribly sick, you know, and not being able to look after myself, and probably terrified of things that go bump in the night and might crawl over me wherever it is I'm going to sleep.
In picking these 8 records to take with you, did you have any plan in mind? Are you looking backwards?
Well, I'm sort of looking all round the time that I've been playing and listening to records and finding records that I want to live with, ones that would bring back lovely, happy memories. Basically, yes.
What's the first one?
The first one is my introduction to big band sounds. I've always loved big bands, and probably Duke Ellington is my all-time favourite. And this is probably my all-time favourite Duke Ellington number. It's called Satin Doll.
Duke Ellington's Satin Doll with Ray Nance on the trumpet. What's your second choice, David?
My second choice is a record by Judy Garland. I've been devoted to her for years. In fact, I think I grew up with her. I mean, I didn't really grow up with her, but I was watching her in the films when I was a boy, and she was the girl next door, or singing about the boy next door, and I always hoped that she was singing to me. And I love her songs, particularly that wonderful thing, the trolley song.
Clang, clang, clang with the trolley, ding, ding, ding with the bell, sing, sing, sing with my heartstrings, from the moment I saw him I fell. Chug, chug, chug with the motor, bump, bump, bump with the brake, thump, thump, thump with my heartstrings, when he smiled I could feel the car shake.
Judy Garland. David, are you a Londoner?
Yes, I am. Born in Streatham.
Any precedent in the family for music or the entertainment business?
Only that a great aunt of mine was a music hall star called Lena Verdi. I never met her, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. What was it your ambition to be as a boy?
Well, first off, I wanted to be a farmer. That didn't work out, and I wanted to be a professional ice skater. I did become a bit of a professional ice skater. Then I really wanted to be a famous something or other. I wasn't quite sure what. I think an actor or something.
What did you, in fact, do when you left school?
Well, when I left school, I did a series of jobs. I worked in an outfitter's shop as a groom in a riding stable. I worked on a farm, and I worked for a tobacco company to learn the tobacco industry.
Well, I gather so far you haven't found your feet. Were you doing any amateur theatre work at the time?
Yes, I was. I appeared in several plays. One particular one was called Murder on the Second Floor, in which I played the lead, I might tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I did the first act very well indeed. But the second act, I went completely to pieces and skipped most of it and went straight into the third.
Pity, because there's some good stuff in the second act.
Yes, that always was a good act.
What is the next important thing to happen?
Well, I think it was because I went into the Navy.
Mm. And what did they do with you there?
Well, I learned to become a sailor. And whilst learning to become a sailor, I met a very charming young lady, sweet girl she was, who was what was called a Jeep, a junior program engineer at the BBC.
Mm.
She was working on a program called Navy Mixture. And she said to me, because she knew I did impersonations, I'm going to fix you up with an audition with the producer, Charles Maxwell, which she did. And I got a broadcast. Charles Maxwell incidentally told me that he quite liked my impersonations, but he thought I introduced them very badly and I'd have to do something about that. Well, I worked on it. And after the broadcast, which I did, there was a commander there from the Admiralty, a commander called Kim Peacock, who said that he thought that my impersonations were frightful, but that I introduced them rather well. And they were looking for a naval representative on the Forces Broadcasting Service. Would I like to be an announcer?
Yes.
Of course, I jumped at it. Two marvellous words.
Where did that take you?
Well, I worked in London. announcing programmes and working with a fellow called John Pertwee, who was my immediate superior officer.
I've heard of him.
Yes. Yeah. And then I went out to Ceylon, yeah, onto Radio SEAC.
There are quite a number of people whose names we'd know who were working on Radio SEAC.
Oh, yes, indeed. Charles Chilton, who was a BBC producer who wrote that Journey to Space series, and he taught me an awful lot. Tito Burns, Ross Parker, Desmond Carrington, who was my roommate, in fact, and MacDonald Hoblin, from whom I took over as chief announcer.
Yes, and that Forces Broadcasting was wonderful training.
Marvellous, because you could practice on the listeners, which was splendid.
A captive audience.
Yes, they could switch off, but they couldn't really get anything else,
no,
except Japanese stuff.
How long were you in Ceylon?
About 2 years, writing, producing, acting, announcing, everything.
Yes, and when you returned to England?
I came straight back in the Navy and was seconded to the BBC as a newsreader on the General Overseas Service.
Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, I think we might break off your third record. What next?
Well, my third record will show me up as being a pop fan in all walks of music, as it were, because it's my only sortie into the classical world. And it proves that I'm an incurable romantic. That's the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture by Tchaikovsky. And if you wouldn't mind playing just that particular romantic piece that everybody seems to ask for.
An excerpt from Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, Karajan conducting the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. So you were in London as a BBC announcer on the overseas service. How long did that last?
About 9 months.
Why did you give up the job?
I didn't actually give it up. It gave me up. I was known for being a chap who was easily made to laugh. And I used to have some dreadful fellows around me who were other announcers who used to make me laugh in the middle of the news. So I was asked to leave. They thought it was best for both of us. I mean, the BBC and me.
Yeah. So what did you become?
I became a freelance broadcaster.
That most hazardous of occupations.
Yes.
Were producers queuing up for your services right away?
No, they weren't. But I did do one or two quite long series. John Arlott gave me a series of Book of Verse.
You also did quite a lot of acting.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I was in Journey into Space. I was in feature after feature. Charles Chilton was very kind to me. Lots of programmes, in fact, did come along. And I became very, very busy because I became available. I was known to be always available for radio newsreel, odd voices and things like that.
Mm-hmm. What was the first important thing?
I think really important when I got a proper credit, as opposed to being other parts played by, was when I got Housewife's Choice in about 1949.
Yes, the first of countless disc programmes. Mm. When did you start on television?
Started about the same time with Pertwee, John Pertwee, in a thing called The Amazing Adventures of Commander High Price.
What was your first panel show, David?
It was called Music, 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 and it lasted one terrible half hour, and that was the end of it. It was dreadful.
You're one of the busiest freelancers in the business. How many shows are you doing at the moment, David?
At the moment, I do 6 regular shows every week. And
which are they?
Well, I do 4 programmes for a commercial company. Mm-hmm. I do my 12 o'clock spin on Thursdays for BBC Sound Radio. I do Jukebox Jerry,
yes,
on Saturdays. And then I, once a month, do Top of the Pops on television. And there's always another show somewhere in the week, like a song contest or something to be done.
As well as the fashion shows and the film commentaries and everything else that turns up.
Quite.
Right, let's have record number 4 now.
I don't know what sort of desert island this is you're putting me on, but those chaps, those Beatles, have undoubtedly charmed at least 2/3 of the world. So I reckon if there are any chaps on this island, I could just put on this record, which I absolutely love, and they might go berserk with pleasure and create me their king immediately. So I'd be king of wherever it is you're sending me to, because of this. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah.
The Beatles, as if you didn't know. David, much of your work is devoted to pop records. This means you have to listen to them all.
Yes, I do.
How many are there a week?
Well, I suppose there are about 40 records issued every week, but that means listening to 80 sides.
Yes. To what age group are pop records directed now?
I'm never sure about what age the commercial market is directed to, but I do know that pop music today is acceptable to all ages. Mm. Everybody seems to like pop music now.
Yes, it is a gigantic business, the production of pop records.
Oh, yes, enormous.
A disc jockey, as he's called, is a very influential person in the pop business.
Well, you say so. Lots of people do say so. I say no. For example, I mean, I have 1 half-hour a week on BBC Sound when I have a record programme, and that would mean that I play 11 records, say.
Mm.
And if I play a record once in that half hour, people aren't going to rush out and say, David Jacobs just played that record, I must go and buy it, because he said it's the best record possible. People never buy records that they don't actually like to listen to.
Yes. Now, you're very busy and very successful in this rather ephemeral kind of working with ephemeral music. Do you find this satisfying, David?
I do.
Have you any other ambitions outside this field?
Oh, I've got lots of ambitions, but I'm very satisfied by it because I often feel a little like a presenter of shows, a producer of shows. Each programme that I present, I work out very carefully. If I'm asked to provide a half hour's entertainment for people using gramophone records, then I shall make absolutely sure that to the best of my ability, I will do it from the second it starts to the second it finishes.
Mm-hmm. These ambitions you were talking about.
Well, once an actor, always an actor. You know, I'm still longing for the day when somebody will say, God, that's just that chap we want. God, why don't we use him in some super play or film?
Mm-hmm. Right, number five, Doug.
Well, I'm not a man who goes to a place of worship to pray. I never have done. In fact, I think I've probably been a little careless through my life, as far as religion is concerned. Often people say they like to go into a field and they get quite near to God. But there's one prayer which has been set to music, most beautifully, by Walter Davis, which I absolutely adore. And it's called God Be in My Head.
God Be in My Head by the Temple Church Choir, which brings us now to number six.
There's a long period of my life, up until about 2 years ago, in fact, when I longed to go to America. I'd never been. And there was one song which seemed to sum up New York for me. It made it the most romantic city in the world, sung by my favourite singer, Ella Fitzgerald. It's called Manhattan. It really, for me, as always, set the scene and made the picture almost complete.
We'll go to Yonkers, where true love conquers in the wilds, and starve together, dear, in Childs. We'll go to Coney and eat bologna on a roll. In Central Park, we'll stroll.
Ella Fitzgerald sings Manhattan by Rodgers and Hart. Do you think your 2 years in Southeast Asia will have helped you towards being a successful desert island castaway?
I suppose it'll help a bit because, I mean, I will know what it's like to get septic prickly heat, to get dobe itch, to get lovely things, you know, and I won't worry too much about it because I'm worried about my health, you see. Mm. So if I see that happen, I'll think, oh, well, I know what that is.
Any hobbies that might be useful?
No, none at all. I'm not a hobby man.
You're not good with your hands?
No, I'm not. In fact, I'm quite dreadful with them. I once had some marvellous cupboards fitted in a dressing room at home, and I thought, I've just got to get a mirror inside one of these cupboards, and I put it up. And it was a great sort of joy to me. I did it magnificently, and I stood back, admired my work, and it was perfect. It was absolutely square and right. I shut the door, and the screw points were sticking out the other side. All four of them.
Now, I'm not going to suggest that you could build a craft, but if you acquired a craft of some sort, if one was washed up.
Yes.
As an ex-Navy man, how's your navigation?
Well, I did learn navigation. I've forgotten most of it. But I learnt a lot of it from a most marvellous man called A.P. Herbert, who said he had a splendid system because he learnt his navigation on the River Thames, and his system was to count the bridges as he went under them.
Would you try to escape?
Well, I don't know. I might like it so much that I might want to stay. I'm not going to tell you till I've been there.
All right, let's have record number 7. Tell me about that instead.
Well, record number 7 is just a piece of piano music by just one of the most marvellous pianists in the world, I think. In the jazz world, really, I should say. It's Mr. Errol Garner, and the talk of the town.
Garner, it's the talk of the town. And now we've come to your last one.
For several years now, about 6, I think, I've used as the closing music to my programmes I Love You, Samantha from High Society, and I don't think I could go anywhere without that. And I think when we play it, we'll play the part I never hear. I always come up on the orchestral part and fade out before Mr. Crosby comes in with the words. So I think I'd like to have that. Ta-da!
Samantha, and my love will never die.
Bing Crosby and Samantha. We've heard your 8 records, David. If you could only take one, which would it be?
Having listened to all 8 together, I think God Be in My Head.
And you're allowed to take one luxury with you.
Ah, well, I'm going to take a piano.
Right. Do you play?
No, I don't, but I'd like to learn. I think that might be a good opportunity.
Right. Better have some music as well.
If I may, and if you could possibly just slip in the lid a photograph of my family, I'd be delighted.
Well, it's not really in the rules, but all right. And one book.
I'm going to take a book called 101 Things a Girl Can Do. I saw it on one of my daughter's bookshelves the other day. I thought, you know, I know what boys can do. It might be a help.
Yes. Yes, it might. Well, thank you, David Jacobs, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Disc.
Thank you for asking me.
Goodbye, everyone.